The court's decision in Planned Parenthood versus Casey reaffirmed the core holding of Roe. That is the precedent of the court and settled.
Clear belief that Jesus came and died and rose again, and that Scripture is revelation from God, and all those doctrines have been steadily eroded within the Episcopal Church.
This is one of the holiest and most moving moments of this entire General Convention for me.
Can priests, pastors, rabbis be sure that their preaching will not be prosecuted?
The First Amendment's right to organize, to preach against, to speak against any way of life or any person is left intact with this legislation.
This life and the end of this life, that story gripped the pro-life community, actually gripped the entire American nation over a period of several years. The name Terry Schindler Schiavo, or Terry Schiavo, is now literally a household name. It's a story of tragedy and of kind of seeing for the first time a lot of people the darker side of a disregard for human life at every stage of development, and especially at the end for those who are not dying, but simply perhaps to those around them inconvenient. We're going to be talking about the legacy of Terry Schindler Schiavo with her brother, Bobby Schindler, for this next hour of Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Friday afternoon. It's July the 24th, broadcasting from the National Lutherans for Life Conference at the DoubleTree Westport here in St. Louis. You can call us and join us for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MIIE, or talkback at issuesetc.org, talkback at issuesetc.org. Bobby Schindler is Executive Director of the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation, co-author of the book A Life That Matters, The Legacy of Terry Schiavo, A Lesson for Us All. Bobby, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to be here today.
How would you characterize the legacy of your sister's life?
Well, gosh, it was certainly a wake-up call with what is happening to those with cognitive disabilities. And I'm glad you made that clarification in your introduction, as Terry was not dying, because there is so much confusion surrounding Terry's case during our battle and even to this day. That so many people just have incorrect perception of her situation.
How frustrating was it for you, Bobby, in the midst of what was being then at the time played out in the national media on a weekly basis, to hear people with PhDs, people with medical degrees, describe your sister's condition as terminal, or to describe her as someone who is near death, when you knew quite different, the family knew quite different?
Well, as you can imagine, it was extremely frustrating. But none of that mattered to our family. Everybody got caught up in this fight that Terry had to prove what she could or could not do in order to live. And our family didn't really care how well Terry was able to respond, even though she was very responsive. Our only intention from the beginning was just to bring Terry home and care for her. And that was, we had a fight. To this day, I can't believe that you even know who Terry Schiavo is. It's really quite... it's outrageous to think that a family had to fight so hard to simply just want to bring a loved one home and care for her. But that's what happened.
Talk about the role that her husband played, Michael Schiavo, in this. Now that you've had some time to reflect on that, out of the heat of the battle that was a legal battle, that was, as I said, a battle fought in the media as well, how would you characterize Michael Schiavo's responsibility in this?
It's hard to figure out what his intentions were in this. In fact, to this day, people come up to me and it doesn't make sense to them, because Michael could have simply walked away. He had started a new life. He was living with and engaged to another woman. When this went to court, he had been engaged to another woman for 6 years. He had two children with this woman, and he clearly moved on with his life. And nobody can understand, nor could our family understand, why Michael just would not allow my parents to care for Terry. So it's people ask me, what was his motivations? Well, there was a lot of money involved. There was a medical trust fund for Terry, close to $1 million, that he was going to inherit because he was the guardian upon Terry's death. So that seemed to be motivating him. But we relinquished all that. We said, Michael, look, you can have it all. You can have the money, you can have everything. Just give Terry back. And he was just hell-bent on making sure that that Terry would die this horrible death that she did die.
Tell us the story, as you can, from beginning to end, of how it is we came to know Terry Schindler Schiavo in this tragic circumstance.
Well, sure. She was 26 years old, and it was 1990, February 25th, and I got a call from my father in the middle of the night that Terry had collapsed. And we lived in the same apartment complex. Terry and I were very close. She was living with Michael, obviously. It was her husband. And I had gotten over there within a couple of minutes, and Terry was on the floor, unresponsive. And I wasn't very concerned because I had saw her just a few hours earlier, and she was fine. She was physically healthy. I thought perhaps she had fainted, passed out. And I reached down and I shook her shoulder. I said, "Come on, Terry, get up." And as I said, she was unresponsive. The paramedics got there because Michael, my dad, Michael called my father first. He didn't call 911. And he said he woke up and Terry was collapsed on the floor. And he called my dad, and my dad said, "Michael, hang up the phone and call 911." So when I reached down and tried to see if Terry would be, wake up, and she was unable, the paramedics had just got there. And I knew there was something seriously wrong when they went and attended her because they went into full code or whatever you call it, and they must have hit her with the defibrillators a half dozen times or so to get her heart started again.
So from there, she's taken into intensive care. The whole family gathers around.
Right.
And at the beginning of all of this, when it's beginning to sink in for the family that she's not going to be the same again, she's not going to recover, what is Michael Schiavo's response and through all of this? Is there a period of time where he's cooperating with you guys and you're all together as a family, so to speak?
Yes, there was. Just to clarify, because of Terry's collapse, she went several minutes without oxygen to her brain, and that's what caused her to suffer a profound brain injury. And she remained dependent on others for her care from that point on. But yes, the first couple of years, Michael was working along with her family, providing Terry the best care that we could provide for her, getting rehabilitation, getting therapy. And I think it's important to remind people that, and as you said in the beginning, Terry was not dying. She never was throughout this whole battle, never dying, did not have a terminal illness. Other than the first couple weeks, Terry was not on any machines. She was initially on all types of machines to keep her alive because it was so serious, but once they weaned her off the ventilator and other machines that were helping her in the beginning, she was fully machine-free, so to speak, and the only thing sustaining her was the same thing that sustains all of us, which is basic care, food and water. So Terry was never dying, and food and water was keeping her alive, but yet, as we know, that was denied to her. But yes, in the beginning, we were working for the first couple of years to try and get Terry better.
She underwent an extensive kind of physical therapy and other kinds of therapy to increase her functionality. The pictures that we had in the media was largely of a woman who is confined to a bed.
Right.
The media would tell us often unresponsive or unaware of the surroundings. In the initial stages of after this brain injury, what was it like interacting with Terry?
Well, the first couple, and you're right, the media throughout my sister's case was insidious. I don't know any other word to use. They were just, and to this day, they continue to inaccurately properly report Terry's situation. But she was responding to rehabilitation therapy. She was starting to speak, and she was making improvements. They were slight, but to us, they gave us signs of hope. And we were encouraged by the progress that she was making, and we're fully working with Michael and fully intended to continue to try and do everything we could for Terry to improve her quality of life.
There was a crucial moment, and I don't recall exactly how it came about, but where you mentioned this before, where a medical trust fund was established, mm-hmm. over which Michael Schiavo was the administrator, and that was established, and his administration of that, if I remember correctly, was contingent upon this money would be used for her continuing care and pretty much only for that. What happened there?
Well, that's when everything changed. In 1993, when the money did come in and was put into this trust for Terry, there was a rift between Michael and my mom and dad. And it was in early 1993, and from that point on is when the fight began. Michael went on this pursuit from that point on. Instead of helping Terry, as he promised, not only our family, not only the jury and the trial, I know we didn't get into the trial where he got the money, or Terry got the trust fund, but he also promised Terry that he was going to care for her and provide her the best care possible. And then he just did a 180 after this fight with my parents, and he went on this pursuit to end her life. And to this day, it was just hard to understand what his motives were, other than some of the obvious motives.
What was your initial, we got about a minute here before our break, but what was the initial reaction, your initial reaction, when you found out that Michael Schiavo, who had been working with you guys, wanted to withdraw basic necessities from your sister?
Well, we didn't learn that until around 1997, when he decided he was going to try and take away her feeding tube. Well, we're in shock, first of all, but then once the shock wore off that he was going to try and do this, we didn't think it would ever happen. We didn't think, with a family that was going to care for Terry, and with all the conflicts of interest on Michael's part, the money, the woman he was living with and engaged to, we didn't think there would be a judge in the land that would ever side with him and order and rule to remove Terry's food and hydration.
Well, when we come back from this break, we'll continue our conversation with Bobby Schindler. He's the brother of Terry Schindler Schiavo, executive director of the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation, and co-author of the book, A Life That Matters, The Legacy of Terry Schiavo, A Lesson for Us All. Our call-in number is, we broadcast live from the National Lutherans for Life Conference at the DoubleTree Westport in St. Louis, 1-877-623-MY-IE. It's Friday afternoon, the 24th of July, 1-877-623-MY-IE, or talkback at issuesetc.org. You'll find a link to the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you, it's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church.
These days, value affords me a new attitude. It lets me appreciate that I can start my day with more than a $6 cup of coffee, and that I officially have permission to skip dinner out to spend time talking with my family over Casserole Inn. Concordia Publishing House offers Christian products that help me focus on what matters most. Visit any of the three Concordia bookstores downtown, in Kirkwood, and on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, or shop online at cph.org and find out what a new value attitude looks like in your life.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
All right, so you missed your congregation's budget deadline, or your congregation turned down your request to join the Issues Etc. 300. Well, there's still a way to add your church to the Issues Etc. 300. Now, anyone who pledges $1,000 to Issues Etc. in the next year will add their congregation to the Issues Etc. 300. We'll promote your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc., and we'll publicize your congregation to the world.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the legacy of Terry Schindler Schiavo with her brother, Bobby Schindler, executive director of the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation, co-author of the book, A Life That Matters. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, and our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MY-IE. So there's a break, obviously. You said it was about 1997 when you realized that that Michael Schiavo had designs on essentially withdrawing the only thing that was necessary to keep your sister alive.
between 1993 1997, how would you characterize the battle there? Were you able to see your sister, go to visit her, and all those kinds of things?
We were able to see Terry, but all rehabilitation therapy was cut off. Michael denied from that point on, basically warehoused and abandoned my sister. Now, from 93 to 97, there was no talk about removing a feeding tube. There was battles going on, primarily to try and remove Michael from guardian of my sister. He did try on two occasions to stop antibiotic treatment when my sister developed a UT infection that would have killed her by sepsis, but the laws of Florida did not allow him to do that. So he was trying to end her life, and it wasn't until 1997 that he figured out that he wasn't going to be able to do it by withholding treatment, and decided to find himself a euthanasia attorney and went on and then a petition to court to remove Terry's food and hydration.
This was positively bizarre, and to hear you say a few minutes ago that you never thought it would come to that, because what judge in the land would permit with the conflicts of interest and with a family standing there saying, we'll take her home, we'll do whatever we got to do,
right,
to protect her and to care for her. How did that actually transpire, that there was a judge in the land who actually did think it was best that Michael take her life rather than you and the family protect her life?
Well, our family was so naive, first of all. It's one of those things I wish we knew then what we know now. But unbeknownst to our family, this type of thing was already happening in our country, the removal of food and hydration to kill those with cognitive disabilities. And it's happening every day as we speak. In fact, that's why we're continuing this fight. I'm not going around rehashing Terry's case. We're now looking out for others that are in similar conditions. So, to get back to your question, we just didn't realize that the laws had been changed that permitted these types of things. I'm sorry, I forgot. What was your initial question?
I think it's a very good answer, and it kind of leads exactly to that next thing, and that is there are people right now who have the same kind of naivete about the laws such as they are protecting people with cognitive disabilities. How would you describe that situation? What is permitted under the law? Now, for people who are, again, we must emphasize, not terminal, not dying,
right,
not even sick, but simply right, have suffered an injury.
Right, you're absolutely right. Terry was physically healthy, essentially, other than her profound brain injury. Simply said, without going into a lot of details of some of the dynamics that are involved, simply said, food and hydration has been redefined legally and in the medical community. It used to be basic care, but now it is redefined to be artificial life support. It's been redefined as medical treatment, as extraordinary care. And because food and water has been redefined, that is what is, and I hate to say allowing us, but that is why people like Terry are in jeopardy of being killed and why they are being killed every day in our country.
So it sounds as though had this redefinition of basic, and we're just talking about food and water,
right,
albeit delivered through a feeding tube.
A very common procedure, by the way.
I mean, they made it sound in the news like she was being sustained by some sort of very sophisticated medical technology that was keeping her alive on a moment-to-moment basis.
It was very simple. There are hundreds of thousands of people at any given time in our country that are either temporarily or on a more permanent basis are using feeding tubes.
What do you think? Had she continued under the therapy that she was giving that was showing improvement, do you think the feeding tube eventually would have been necessary for her?
There's doctors that believe they could have weaned her off the feeding tube. And that's what's so sad, that Michael denied all these rehabilitation and therapy, all this rehabilitation therapy that doctors were willing to provide for my sister. There's no telling, especially with some of the technology they have available today, there's no telling how well Terry's quality of life would have improved from what he did to her. And people don't realize, and I say this a lot when I speak, because you had mentioned about the media portraying Terry as having to be confined in this bed. Terry could be right here with us right now. All she needed was a wheelchair. We could have taken her anywhere. I mean, it would have been difficult to put her in a plane and get her up here, but we could have. I mean, she was completely mobile, but people had this perception that she was confined to a bed, and it simply wasn't true. What they did to my sister was a tragedy. It was a disgrace because they abandoned her and warehoused her and did not provide her, not even with simple range of motion. Terry deteriorated to the point where you saw her the way she was in those pictures. And then they were saying, look at this poor girl. Look at her quality of life. Wouldn't it be much better if we just, you know, put her out of her so-called misery? It was horrible.
What do you want to say about, and I know you answer these questions all the time, but what do you want to say about what was alleged in the press that this is what she wanted? She had expressed in some form or another to Michael Schiavo that if she ever entered this kind of a state, and it was called persistent vegetative state, but it was really just a cognitive disability.
It is. You're absolutely right.
But I wouldn't want to live this way or something like that. What's your response to that?
Well, and that's what Michael used. And he had to give a reason why he was removing the feeding tube. And he went into the court and said, Terry, well, I should say he fabricated the wishes, that Terry wouldn't want to live this way. And what he said was, before Terry's collapse, that he had stated to her, that she had stated to him that if she was ever incapacitated, that she wouldn't want to live this way. And to this day, I mean, these wishes, these so-called wishes, did not surface for almost 8 years. It was after the money came in, $1 million. It was after Michael was living with and engaged to another woman. So in our family's minds, and many people that I've spoken to, there's no doubt that Michael perjured himself in front of this judge in order to kill my sister. It was just a complete fabrication of her wishes.
In telling her story, I want you to talk a bit about her last days. How much access were you and the family allowed to her in Terry's final days?
Well, we were only able to visit her when we were given permission by Michael to be able to. And that was the way it was because Michael – people don't realize maybe – you know, I speak in generalities, and I apologize. I know when I say we and I say people, I'm not trying to include everybody. I know some people understand this, but the guardian has an incredible amount of power over the person he is guardian of. And Michael was able to pretty much dictate when we could visit and not visit Terry, particularly those last 2 weeks. But when he did allow us, we went in there, but there was always armed policemen. You know, setting the scene of what was going on those last 2 weeks would just people, when I, and in fact I'll talk about it tonight, people just can't believe that in America today that this type of thing is happening. And the police that were involved, and you would think that the police would be here to protect people from doing this to my sister, right? But no, they were protecting Michael in order that nobody would stop Terry from being killed.
And
it was surreal, Pastor, to answer your question. It was absolutely surreal. It was a nightmare to see her these last two weeks.
Has anyone in the family had any communication with Michael Schiavo since Terry's death?
No. And that's one of the questions I get asked quite a bit. And I would. It's not like I would never speak to Michael again. I certainly would if he approached us and wanted to talk. But I just don't know that will ever happen.
When all was said and done, and the story faded from the national media's attention, what happened next for you and your parents? With about a minute before we go to a break.
Well, our family jumped right into it and started. We had already established a foundation to try and help my sister, try and save my sister's life. And after Terry died, we kind of reorganized our efforts and legally reorganized the foundation and started advocating for others. I don't think people understand the scope and the reality of what is happening in our country today. There are tens of thousands of people in similar and even worse conditions than Terry, and their lives are in jeopardy, and we're seeing it now as a foundation. So our family started advocating for them once Terry died.
Folks, it's Friday afternoon, the 24th of July. You're listening to Issues Etc. as we broadcast live from the National Lutherans for Life Conference at the DoubleTree Westport in St. Louis. I'm Todd Wilkin. What kind of questions or comments do you have for Bobby Schindler, the brother of Terry Schindler Schiavo? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Or you can email us in the studio, and we get those emails here remotely, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Another half hour with Bobby Schindler. He's executive director of the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation. We'll talk a little bit about that foundation on the other side. He's co-author of the book, A Life That Matters, The Legacy of Terry Schiavo, A Lesson for Us All. 1-877-623-6943 or talkback@issuesetc.org. There's something you could do for us, our regular listeners. We often ask favors of our listeners, support and all sorts of things. Of course, we have another favor to ask, and that's if you would to tell 10 of your friends about Issues Etc. as you hear in these 2 hours, defending life from beginning to end, just one of the things that we do. There's an Issues Etc. YouTube video. You can find it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click promote. When you get the embed code for the video, put it in an email to 10 of your friends. Send it to us too, talkback@issuesetc.org, a way of promoting Issues Etc. with your friends and your loved ones. And when you do, you'll be registered to win a $100 gift certificate to Concordia Publishing House. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click promote, find that embed video, send it to 10 of your friends and to us as well. Talkback@issuesetc.org.
Here's your chance to win a $100 gift certificate to Concordia Publishing House. Email 10 friends the latest Issues Etc. YouTube video, and we'll register you to win a gift certificate from Concordia Publishing House. We'll announce the winner on August 28th. Just go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, copy and paste the video's embed code into an email, send it to 10 friends, relatives, or fellow parishioners. Be sure to send a carbon of your email with your name and address to talkback@issuesetc.org. Tell 10 friends about Issues Etc. and tune in on Friday, August the 28th to find out if you're the winner of a $100 gift certificate to Concordia Publishing House. Go to issuesetc.org, click promote, and send the Issues Etc. YouTube video to your friends.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are Planned Parenthood staffers violating state law?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Pro-life college students have launched a successful campaign to show that Planned Parenthood staffers routinely violate state laws by not reporting alleged incidents of statutory rape. Volunteers from Students for Life of America have videotaped at least 3 incidents of students posing as young teenagers and telling Planned Parenthood officials that they were impregnated by a man over 21 years of age. In each instance, the abortion staffer violated state law by not reporting the incident. 2 staffers were suspended after the video of the incident was released on the internet, and legal action could be pending.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our conversation with Bobby Schindler continues. We're talking about the legacy of Terry Schindler Schiavo. 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MY-I-E or talkback@issuesetc.org. Let's go to the phones and talk with Mark, who's listening in St. Louis. Mark, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you. Just very briefly, a great show, and I wish, you know, I could spend a lot of time with your guest, and but just a couple things he said that is, you know, he said insidious. You know, just the media, the law enforcement, you know, in our pro-death culture today, it's chilling. And I'm glad he's out there and his family, you know, trying to make a difference. And that's really all I got to say. I don't have much time right now.
Well, Mark, thank you very much, and thanks for listening in St. Louis. Your response, Bobby?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't think people realize how uplifting it is for our family to continue to receive emails of support, because it's very discouraging what we're seeing out there, and we need people that know that what's happening is wrong, and it's heartwarming to hear the support that we're still getting.
Here's Herman in Illinois. Herman, thank you for waiting.
Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Schindler, you described that Michael Schievel proceeded on the basis of a legal standing of guardianship for what he did with Cherry. And you also mentioned the propaganda in the media. Were there other interests coming in behind him that bolstered what he wanted to do? And if so, how would you identify or describe them?
That is a very good question, Herman. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm not exactly sure by what Herman means by other interests.
Well, it sounds like he's asking, was this Michael Schievel all on his own, or were there other people who were perhaps interested in advancing these kind of laws that redefine nourishment and things like that?
I think Terry was just a case that they wanted and they used to further their agenda. There's no doubt. There was a very by the time this thing ended, there were some very very powerful organizations that were working then Terry's life, and we call them a euthanasia movement or what have you. But there's no doubt. We knew. I mean, some of the people and the players that were surfacing, it was pretty frightening to know that there was this type of organizations that were behind the killing of Terry.
Who did you have on your side? I mean, obviously, many in the nation, many faceless people in the nation were on your side of this battle. But who were you hearing from in terms of people who had some power or influence, who are saying, we're going to do everything we can to try and protect.
Right.
I'm thinking about the governor of Florida, namely, right. We're going to do everything we can to protect your sister.
Well, that's what's so remarkable about this, Pastor, is the influence, the people that were supporting and advocating for Terry. Not only were there tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of people, not only nationally but internationally, that were campaigning to help Terry. We had the Florida legislature, the governor of Florida. We had Congress, of course, the President of the United States. We had some very high officials at the Vatican in Rome that were speaking out strongly in favor of my sister. We even had, I guess, the pro-life, everybody that was pro-life in Hollywood speaking out for Terry, which was about a half a dozen.
Not a big group.
No, but Mel Gibson, Jim Caviezel, who played Passion of the Christ, played Jesus, Patricia Heaton. So there was just, and I'm sorry, and I should have mentioned this too. There was, and something that the media would never report was I believe last count there was 30 local and national disability organizations that were also speaking out on behalf of my sister, which was very important because it shows you the media's position in this and how they would refuse to report this because they didn't want to view Terry or look at Terry as a disabled woman. They would rather use the words that would dehumanize her and desensitize us to what we're actually doing.
See, I have probably done more interviews on this single case than any other pro-life case mm-hmm. in the years I've done this program, and I did not know. Even interviewing you previously, I did not know that there were disability groups who were vocal in this thing. I guess we just didn't hear any of it.
The media is not only dangerous with what they report, they're also very dangerous what they omit and what they don't say. And one of the things they rarely reported was the amount of disability groups that were publicly voicing their support to stop this from happening, give Terry back to her family. So because they realize and understand this issue and know that they're the targets. And, you know, 10, 15 years ago, this would have been unthinkable to starve and dehydrate someone like my sister to that. Today it's ordinary. Where are we going to be 5, 10, 15 years from where we are today?
Don in Kansas emails us. He says, I see the death of Terry as a court-ordered first-degree murder. I fear if Obama gets his health care plan, the government will order the death of anyone who they do not consider worthy of life. Thank you, Bobby, for all that you're doing for life. Your thoughts on Don's observation there in Kansas?
Well, the health care, the government-controlled health care, that's a whole different issue. Well, it's the same issue, but I mean, it's a whole different show, really, I guess you could say.
Sure.
I'm reading what the experts are saying and how it would affect it. People like Terry don't stand a chance if we go to, in my opinion, if we go to government-controlled health care. They don't stand a chance because we're doing it now, deciding life and death based on someone's quality of life, and it's going to get even more, I use the word insidious, it's going to get even more insidious, I believe, if this government takes over the care of particularly people like my sister.
The term that you use there, quality of life, seems now to be kind of the genie that's just emerging from this bottle. And there are people in the bioethics community who are rubbing as hard as they can on that bottle to try and get this genie out and have its way in bioethics. People who are disabled, people who are either by accident or by birth, and people who are at the end of life, all these things. The term quality of life sounds so good. What does it really mean when it's in the hands of people who want to eliminate those who don't have a sufficient quality of life?
Right. What does it mean? How do you define quality of life? It is completely subjective. What somebody's quality of life might be somebody else has a different definition of quality of life. And that's why it's so dangerous that we're determining life and death on something so subjective. No longer do we look at life as being sacred. We look at life as being, as all life having equality, as having value and dignity. We are now deciding who should live and die. And in my sister's case, based on their outward experience, presence or their out, what they can and cannot do, quite simply. And that's what's so frightening with what's happening today.
Okay. You obviously, if we go back, it's now what, from the beginning of this whole ordeal, the better part of 20 years, certainly didn't imagine yourself doing this today. And all of these intervening events have brought about a very different life for you and for your parents. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, you're right. It's just it's eye-opening to see what's happening. And I basically thought I was going to get married, have kids, and just live out my life. And to be doing what I'm doing now would never – but that's God's way. I mean, what was that I heard recently? Tell God – if you want to make God laugh, tell him what your plans are. So that's kind of what happened to me. But it's just this doesn't feel like a job for me. It's just my way of life. It's just what our family is doing now. And God willing, hopefully I can do this as long as He wants me to, because it's so important. And we have to start standing up for our vulnerable. And I'm seeing our country becoming more and more desensitized every day to this issue. And and I hate to sound so doom and gloom. Because there is a lot of hope, and there is, as the one caller called, and your other callers, there's hope out there, and I think a lot of people do get it, so to speak. But just with such powerful influences occurring in our country today, it's quite frightening.
Bobby, we're both, I don't know that you would be if you're about a year younger than me, but I'm a trailing edge baby boomer. 1946 to 1964, that gigantic generation that kind of is the pig going through the python. And that generation of 88 million people will, in very short, in a matter of decades, be laying in hospital beds in nursing homes, will have cognitive disabilities, will grow senile, things like that, but not sick. They'll be essentially medically in exactly the same position your sister was before she had her life taken from her. What do we need to do in terms of our national awareness, but also legally, to see that people like me are protected when I don't have the ability to express myself any longer or get up and get out of a bed?
Well, it's a tough question to answer. And I'm not against people making their own medical decisions and their choices. I personally would never choose to be starved and dehydrated to death. But that's, if someone makes that clear, then they can ask that to be done, for lack of a better way of saying it. But I think we have to care, first of all. There's so much apathy out there. People don't want to deal with this issue. And we really need to educate ourselves. We're being educated by the secular media. But how do we protect ourselves? With what we're seeing today, advanced directives aren't worth the paper that they're printed on, in many cases. We have these feudal care committees now that are able to overpower or really disregard even someone's own advanced directives. I tell people, I'm not an attorney, but I tell people what my attorney told me, and that is that healthcare proxy, someone that would speak for you, and it doesn't have to be one person, it could be more than one, someone that would speak with you, speak for you, same types of values and beliefs that you would have if you ever do become incapacitated. But again, as you know, going back to government-controlled healthcare, even if you have people speaking for you, even if you do have your wish is written down and they're quite clear. It could very well be a government official making decisions contrary to your own.
We're talking with Bobby Schindler, brother of Terry Schindler Schiavo. 1-877-623-6943 or talkback@issuesetc.org. 10 more minutes on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. Come on, baby, don't you
historic biblical Lutheran theology is more urgently needed at this moment than at any other moment in history.
Dr. Lawrence White of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Houston, Texas, on the importance of Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. is in the forefront of that movement, in the extension of the kingdom of God, the proclamation of the Lord Jesus Christ, the demonstration that our Lord Jesus is not irrelevant to what's going on in the culture, that our historic biblical Lutheran theology is more urgently needed at this moment than at any other moment in history, and Issues Etc. is in the forefront of that movement.
You can support this worldwide outreach by making a tax-deductible gift online, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
From Japan to Oslo, Norway, here is Simon. Simon, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to vote for Benny Hinn. My reason for doing so is because, well, Jesus, the second Adam, ascended to heaven, so I guess there's some truth to it.
Thank you very much. Apparently they have senses of humor in Norway. Thank you very much for listening in Norway.
Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line. 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7. 618-223-8384.
We're talking with Bobby Schindler, executive director of the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation, co-author of the book A Life That Matters, The Legacy of Terry Schiavo, A Lesson for Us All. You can purchase A Life That Matters under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Still time for your phone calls and your email for Bobby Schindler. He's the brother of Terry Schindler Schiavo. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're broadcasting live this Friday afternoon, July the 24th, from the National Lutherans for Life Conference at the Doubletree Westport here in St. Louis. You mentioned something before the break, Bobby, and that is advanced directives, which are kind of the standard, the legal standard for people when they think, what do I want in terms of the end of my life? You say generally they can be overridden by feudal care policies in hospitals and elsewhere, and you suggest what you called a healthcare proxy. So talk about why this feudal care theory is so damaging to people's express will, even when it's put in black and white in an advanced care directive.
Right. And again, I want to just reiterate that I'm not an attorney, and it's probably best you sit down with a good pro-life attorney, even perhaps a pro-life doctor, when you do these types of things. But yeah, feudal care is kind of, I hate to say it this way, sweeping the nation. But we're seeing more and more laws that are empowering doctors and hospitals basically to override even someone's own advance directive. In fact, many of the calls that come into the foundation from families that we're helping is families that are calling us where these feudal care committees are getting together and basically saying, look, you have a certain amount of time to move your loved one to another facility because we're going to stop life-sustaining treatment. And so then a family is hysterical because they have to find another facility to move their loved one, or the current one they're in their life-sustaining treatment is going to be stopped. And people aren't even aware of these feudal care committees. You wouldn't be, really, unless you were kind of into this issue or if something happened to your family and you're placed in those types of situations.
I can't imagine how this works. You got someone in there, you or the insurance company, you're paying perfectly good money to this facility to care for your loved one, and some committee associated with that facility can actually decide to withdraw life-sustaining care from your loved one.
Absolutely. And I'm not sure where the insurance companies fit into this equation. Mm-hmm. A lot of the situations we deal with, the people actually don't have insurance. So that might be a factor in why these types of things are occurring. But I'm sure that they do occur even in situations where insurance is being covered, whether it's being covered by insurance.
So again, with the caveat that neither of us are legal experts or lawyers, what is this thing that you described, a healthcare proxy? It sounds like the opposite of what Terry had. Terry had someone fighting for the withdrawal of care as hard as he could. What is a healthcare proxy?
Well, it could very well be that. I mean, if you empower someone to do that for you, then that's what they would do. It's basically, if you become incapacitated, you appoint a person or persons to speak for you. They would be your healthcare advocate, basically, if you became unable to speak for yourself. So they would be the ones making decisions and deciding what type of treatment you would want or would not want. And I guess these, along with advanced directives, is the best way, from my understanding, to protect oneself. But again, with the way things are changing in our healthcare system and with government-controlled healthcare, perhaps down the road, there's no telling what lies ahead for us, even if we do have healthcare proxies or advanced directives.
You said earlier, if we knew now what we, or if we knew then what we know now. If there was one thing you could kind of flash yourself back in time to 1992 to give yourself some advance warning, you and your mom and your dad, one bit of information, what would you say? What is it you would want to have known then?
I think better preparing ourselves for the trial in front of Judge Greer, the initial trial, on whether or not Terry's feeding tube was going to be removed. We just did not know anything about this issue, really, and went in there blindsided. I mean, Michael Schiavo, attorney, basically came in there hunting for bears, so to speak, and we just got crushed in that week-long trial. Crushed, I don't know a better way. It was horrible what we went through in that trial, and we just didn't know what we were up against.
If you saw Michael Schiavo again today, what would you say to him?
Tell him that I'm praying for him, which is what I tell people when they ask me that. Because I often say, can you imagine if Michael had a conversion and was actually went out and spoke and said what he did was wrong and said, look, I made a mistake and we shouldn't be doing this to individuals like Terry and we should be protecting him. I think he'd be a very powerful voice in this fight to protect life.
Finally, then, what should we all learn from the story of your sister, Terry Schindler Schiavo?
Well, that they are, people like Terry are not burdens. And we have to, these are not easy answers. I mean, these are difficult situations. But we have two choices. We either choose to kill people like my sister, or we choose to care for them. And if we keep going down this road where we're justifying, rationalizing reasons to kill people with these cognitive disabilities, as we said, it's chilling to see where this road will go, and we just simply have to understand that these people are most vulnerable, and they teach us how to love, quite honestly, because they are unable to they are so vulnerable, and they really allow us to express our love and our care, and instead we're looking at them as inconveniences, as burdens. And you know, I've always said, Pastor, all the focus on Terry, were really, this is about us and us as a nation and how we're going to treat those that just need our love and care.
Tell us just a bit, with only about a minute here, about the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation.
Well, we talked briefly about it, but we get calls all the time. Our family, it's just our family. We're a 501(c), and we survive by the generosity of supporters. So I urge people to please visit our website. And it's a very good resource on this issue, and you can see some of the things that we're doing and the help we're trying to provide for families. And we need your help, and, of course, we always need your prayers. So you can sign up for a free e-newsletter. Plus, there's a DVD that's available. That was just produced by Joni Erickson Tata. That is kind of tells the story and what it means for the disabled. So visit our website, and I urge people to support us.
I know that this is a difficult question, but do you think, knowing Terry as you did, that in the end, if people can understand all the things we've talked about here, not only with regard to her life, but with regard to all the countless others that we'll never read about in the newspaper, do you think she would have said that all of this was worth it?
Oh, gosh. Let me answer it this way. There's no doubt in my mind that we're a very close family, and we still are today, obviously. There's no doubt in my mind if any one of us were in Terry's position or situation, she'd be doing the same thing we're doing for her now. She was a shy girl, and I think her in the spotlight, it's not something she would have ever wanted. But I think she'd be very happy and proud of what her family is doing for her now.
Bobby Schindler is executive director of the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation, co-author of the book A Life That Matters, The Legacy of Terry Schiavo, A Lesson for Us All. Folks, I encourage you all to come out for the National Lutherans for Life Convention this week. It's a conference here at the Westport Doubletree in St. Louis. For more information, you can find out all about it, lutheransforlife.org. Thank you very much, Bobby, for being our guest. It's been great talking to you. You've been very generous with your time, and Godspeed on your banquet speech tonight here at Lutherans for Life.
Well, thank you, and I'm very privileged to be and honored to be invited. And one more, our website is terrysfight.org. It's Terry with an I, TerrysFight.org. And I appreciate it. Thank you, Pastor.
Yes, we will post a link to the foundation, the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation, and its website, Bobby Schindler, at our website tonight, issuesetc.org, click on demand. As I said, come on out for the convention. It is still going on. Bobby's going to be speaking tonight, and I believe they have many speakers and lots of information this weekend. You can find out more information, lutheransforlife.org, lutheransforlife.org. Thanks to the staff at the Doubletree Westport. They have been remarkably helpful in putting together this remote, and everybody who's come and all of the guests that we had for this afternoon of Issues, etc. There are certain lives that are kind of laid down in sacrifice, willingly or unwillingly. We read about them in history books, and in time, after they become history, we see the lessons that we are to learn thereby. And although Terry Schindler Schiavo's story is more recent history, I think it's already quite apparent that she has, if nothing else in her life, and that the way that life was so unjustly and wrongly ended, she has shown us that there are many more just like her. And that if we are concerned for life, be it in the womb, the end of life, we ought to think about those whose lives are not in any immediate danger because of disease. Their lives are simply different from ours. Maybe they're disabled by birth or disabled by accident. And you might call them those people whose lives are deemed unworthy. They are as much in need of our protection. They are our neighbors, too. I said it before, and I'll say it again. Our Savior defines the neighbor as the one who is least able to do anything for us. They may be considered as those who contribute nothing, or perhaps take and don't contribute anything to our society. That's exactly who Jesus regards as the neighbor, those who are least able to do for us, least able to repay the kindness and the love that we show them. And that is precisely why he calls them our neighbors and expects us to treat them that way. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again Monday. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.